perhaps 15 meters from us. I shook his hand. He kept shaking. He would not let go. He gripped harder and harder. With his back to his wife, he whispered, "I must do this." I smiled and muttered, "Tomorrow night at 18:30 hours. I provided a venue, one that he knew. Then I nodded to his wife, still standing guard on the porch, and I wandered out of the neighborhood via a different route. I picked him up the next evening at the prearranged location. We drove for half an hour while I double-checked for surveillance and reviewed his state of mind. "Are you sure that you want to do this?" I asked. "Of course, I must. I cannot live like this, supporting my government while they brutalize my people. I hate not telling my wife, but one day she will understand." "You know that I am leaving, and this will be our last meeting. I must introduce you to another officer. We must go there now." "Who is he? Is he good?" the new agent inquired. "You bet. He's a Vietnam War vet. He's had several tours. He's my boss, and he's a great friend. He's eager to meet you, to work with you." Any recruiting ops officer knows that the turnover of an asset to another officer is a crucial operational act. The agent, especially a new one, must accept that his relationship is with the CIA, not just an individual officer. The turnover also serves as an effective vetting tool, because another officer brings another perspective to the case. We approach the safe site, located down a single-lane dirt track that led to a small, isolated cabin overlooking the water. My colleague waited outside, standing at a discreet distance. He made himself easily visible to our new source as I parked the car. Tall and fit, with a calm manner, my colleague slowly approached the vehicle as we exited. I introduced them and immediately stepped back. They shook hands and surveyed each other. They smiled, nodded, and eased into an increasingly intense discussion. That didn't take long, I thought, as I observed them working to establish rapport and to forge a solid relationship. The operation and the life of our asset depended upon it. They, of course, both knew that. Except for a couple of brief interjections, I just observed the two. After a decent interval of half an hour, I said goodbye to them both. They had much to cover, and I had nothing more to contribute. I never saw my friend the agent again. Only several years later I did learn his fate. Eventually, with his wife's support, he worked productively for the CIA for many years. He provided valuable intelligence across a broad spectrum of important issues. He was never exposed. He simply and quietly retired, wealthy and safe. Noble spies like him helped win the Cold War. Money. Slight, swarthy, with thick black oily hair that he periodically slicked back with a dirty comb, he looked around the bar every few minutes as if in search of somebody. Perhaps nobody in particular, I surmised. He displayed a brilliant white toothy smile in response to my introduction. "How are the girls here?" he asked. "Don't know, but probably a risky bet," I answered. His dark eyebrows bounced up and down, and he flashed more of those white teeth. Then his eyes roamed the dark, dingy bar. "What a scallywag," I thought. We compared notes about the sad social scene. It did not take very long. He drank. I did not, but I paid for his whiskey shots, because he was a foreign diplomat, and I wondered if he was agent material. We continued to meet socially, usually in some dive where he could score a prostitute. I paid for his drinks and listened to his complaints, mostly about his meager government salary, or the substandard women in this squalid town. Over the weeks, I elicited biographical information and sought to determine his access to secret, unique, valuable information. This was easy because he was a talker. He was also blatantly greedy and childishly selfish. He wanted money for his version of personal fulfillment. He displayed zero interest in ideology or even basic international relations. He did not care. Nor did he care about what anybody else thought of him. So I figured there was not much leverage for compromise. Ego played a role, but was not paramount. He understood his limitations and his prospects. Despite his base motivations and uninspiring life, at times I could not help but like the guy. He was funny, transparent, unpretentious, and blunt. "Are you the right person? Are you the right person in your U.S. embassy? Perhaps maybe somehow I should speak with someone else? Yes? No?" He yammered and yammered, with hands on hips and skinny chest pushed forward, chin up. He looked ridiculous. "No, I am the right person," I replied. "We just want to make sure an arrangement will work for you and us." "It will work. You pay me, I give you secrets. Simple." He smiled. Then he shrugged. "Maybe you are not the one. Maybe not. Maybe someone else." "How much do you want?" I asked. $1,000 per month," he answered. "I will ask for $300 and let you know next week." His bottom lip protruded. I thought he was probably a pain in the ass as a kid. We looked around the almost empty bar. We were in a quiet corner. It was still too early for him to score. I wanted to go home and read a book about some real-life hero who could motivate me with a sense of mission far beyond this target's selfish needs. Dealing with this guy, despite the entertainment value and the potential intelligence score, was growing tiresome. Finally, in response to my offer, the prospect said, "That is not enough, but I will see you next week." As I moved toward the exit, two young, fit Lebanese guys walked into the grimy bar. Perhaps Hezbollah fighters from Beirut or the Bekaa Valley, here for rest and recuperation, I thought. "Would love to recruit one of them," I mused. I wondered if my prospective agent could get close to them, given that I probably could not. The next week, after more complaining, he agreed to the salary. He accepted tasks, demonstrated a reasonable degree of discipline, and returned to his country for a brief visit. There he met a local CIA officer who began more validation of our source's access and abilities. The verdict? The agent had limited institutional access to intelligence, but maintained a wide range of contacts and could generate modest intelligence through elicitation. Viewed as harmless and entertaining, co-workers apparently confided in him. Back in his foreign assignment, working for me, he provided minimal intelligence, both in quantity and value. This is not unusual for some foreign officials assigned to junior positions in minor posts. The potential rested in his return home, where he could have greater access to privileged information through both documents and personal contacts. In this case, I never knew the outcome. While this particular asset produced negligible information just after his recruitment, he had sufficient mental horsepower to learn the trade, the moxie to take risks, and the interpersonal skills to develop his own networks. We sought to validate him, train him, and develop some sense of mission and loyalty to the CIA. We tested him with a trial run during his brief visit back home. I eventually turned him over to another officer, and I have no idea how well he performed or how long he lasted as an agent. I have my doubts, given his self-centered motivation. He could be rented, I feared, by anybody. Some of the best agents began collaboration with the CIA in isolated, stressful hardship posts, where help from their own governments was often limited. This assistance ranged from the heartwarming to the disgusting. I provided medical help for a developmental target's ill wife. I would recruit him months later. On another occasion, I delivered porno videos to a recruitment target. Eventually, in a team effort, we recruited him. In one station, we kept a box of the porno magazines and videos as emergency reserves. I never met a North Korean diplomat who did not want porn, either for personal use or resale. U.S. tax dollars for the sexual titillation of North Koreans? No problem, if one North Korean source helps the CIA understand their nuclear threat. U.S. tax dollars for an incorrigible, dubious agent who spent his salary on whores? Sure, if he could provide valuable secrets.